So hemoglobin and myoglobin, and again we'll be using overhead projections today because they didn't deliver the projector from the computer, but basically you have your notes there. And as we start to look at them, first of all, the thing we notice about hemoglobin and myoglobin is they are proteins. So they have protein structure, meaning they have primary, secondary, tertiary, and in the case of hemoglobin, quaternary structure. Myoglobin is the most simple, or the simpler of the two, and so we're going to talk about it first. This is a little color picture, which on the wall will be a little hard to see. But again, it's a cartoon drawing of a protein, and this happens to be a myoglobin molecule. And you can see myoglobin is a single chain. It's got a lot of alpha helix in it, which if you can see it, is all those blue squiggly lines. It is a globular protein. That's how it is classified. And it has a prosthetic group, which is an organic cofactor. Remember, organic cofactor. There was two types, coenzyme and prosthetic group. Myoglobin has a prosthetic group in it that is called the heme group. The heme group. Hemoglobin also has a heme group in it. And that is this little molecule that you can see here, kind of a ring structure. And if you look in your notes at your first picture, you have a better example of a heme prosthetic group. And the heme prosthetic group is located in a little cleft, in a crevice, basically in the globin part, in the protein part of the molecule. So again, as you look at this picture, you can see the little red prosthetic group, the heme group, is basically stuck in amongst the amino acids in the protein's tertiary structure. So that is what a heme group looks like. You will notice it is basically a porphyrin ring. It has an iron at its center, an iron in the 2+ state, which is the ferrous state. And the iron has 6 coordination sites to it. In this picture, you can very easily see 4 of the coordination sites, which are pretty easy, and those are nitrogens. So the Fe2+ is coordinated to 4 nitrogens, which are part of this big ring structure. And again, you can fairly clearly see those. The other 2 coordination sites, we can see a little bit better in this picture. And this again is a picture of the heme group. It's turned a little bit on its side, so it gives it a little bit of three-dimensionality. And you can see here, basically, the 5th and 6th coordination sites. So here's the nitrogens. Again, they're in the plane of the heme group in the ring, coordinated to the iron. And at the 5th site is what we call the proximal histidine residue. And basically, that's an R group, histidine group, basic group, that's coming from the protein. So remember, this is sitting in a cleft, and it's got this whole protein out here. So all these amino acids, a chain held together, alpha helix, primary, secondary, tertiary structure. And this R group from the heme coordinates, and we call that the 5th coordination site, and we call it the proximal histidine. Just its name, the proximal histidine. The 6th coordination site is probably the most important one, and if I move this over a little bit, that is where the oxygen actually binds to the heme prosthetic group. The oxygen actually binds to the heme prosthetic group. So, myoglobin, which is the simplest of the two, and we're talking about myoglobin and hemoglobin, is a single protein. It's got primary, secondary, tertiary structure, got a lot of alpha helical character. It is a globular protein. And sitting in a cleft in that protein is an organic cofactor, also known as a prosthetic group. That's the one that doesn't leave, it stays there permanently. And that prosthetic group has 6 coordination sites, 4 for nitrogens in the ring, which are in the plane of the ring, 1 for a proximal histidine residue, and the 6th site is where the oxygen binds. The oxygen binds. And it turns out that the oxygen, once it's bound, also attracts, again through hydrophobic interactions, another histidine ring, and this one we call the distal histidine. But notice the distal histidine is not actually one of the coordination sites. It is simply bound by hydrophobic or hydrostatic forces to the oxygen, which is at the sixth coordination site. So six sites, 1, 2, 3, 4 by nitrogen, fifth proximal histidine, six is oxygen. The oxygen then binds electrostatically to another histidine, and we call that kind of the distant one. We call it distal, the distal histidine. And remember, those histidine R groups are coming from the protein, which is all wrapped around, as we could kind of see in our nicely colored three-dimensional picture. The protein's all wrapped around there, and in fact, you can see in this little picture the histidines, and those are their numbers, so that would correspond to where they are in the sequence of the protein, which would be its primary structure. And they fall at position 64 and 93, which is not an important fact, but that's where the proximal and distal histidines fall. So they are coordinated. You will notice that not only does the heme prosthetic group bind oxygen, it also binds carbon monoxide, CO. And CO is a byproduct of metabolism, strangely enough. There's basically one or two reactions in the body that produce carbon monoxide. And it turns out that the heme group actually has a higher affinity for carbon monoxide than it does for oxygen. So at any time, if we took out some of our hemoglobin or myoglobin and we analyzed it and we were able to look at it close enough on an atomic structure, we would find some of it has carbon monoxide bound to it at any given time. Also, most of it has oxygen, but some of it has carbon monoxide. Well, it turns out that the heme group actually has, if we took it out and tested it, a higher affinity. And the word affinity we're going to use a lot in the rest of the course. It means an attraction or a desire for, an affinity for. Has a higher affinity for carbon monoxide than it does for oxygen. And that is why you can get what is called CO poisoning, carbon monoxide poisoning. Something you hear about not as much on this coast as the East Coast, where they use fuel in furnaces that produces carbon monoxide as a byproduct. But if you are not in a well-ventilated room or your furnace is malfunctioning somehow, particularly at night when you're asleep, your house can fill with carbon monoxide, and you don't know it, of course. And because your hemoglobin likes it so much, the heme group in the hemoglobin, it'll bind a whole bunch of it. And then, of course, when it does that, it can't bind oxygen, so it ceases to oxygenate your tissues. And you basically progress through a series of symptoms. You get very sleepy, you get tired, but basically you fall asleep, you become unconscious, and if you stay in it or no one finds you or et cetera, then eventually that will progress and you can die from it. It is very easily cured. Here's our projector. Hi. Yeah, a little late. Okay. So I won't set up the computer, we'll just go primitive today, anyway, we're thinking. But if we'd had a longer quiz, see, I shouldn't have just asked what is your name. But the carbon monoxide, so if not treated, which the treatment is fairly easy, particularly if you get it in time, is to just get fresh air. In other words, get back into an atmosphere that has lots of oxygen in it, so that the hemoglobin will begin to bind oxygen instead of carbon monoxide. The body has actually developed a mechanism to discriminate between the two, and it will, if in an oxygen atmosphere, bind oxygen, so it will discriminate, but it really does like carbon monoxide. So if you get into a room full of it, it will bind it, and that's what can happen. So again, if we took out a sample of our myoglobin or hemoglobin, we would find some of it is bound with carbon monoxide rather than oxygen. There's a table now that you don't need to memorize. It's basically there for you to look at. It gives you an idea of some PO2s in millimeters of mercury, so oxygen pressures. And I give you that because we're going to begin to talk a lot about oxygen pressures, and we're going to talk even more about them when we get into talking about gas exchange, which we will do on Wednesday. And it just gives you an idea of about what normal PO2s are, what normal pressures are. Air pressure, normal air pressure, atmospheric pressure at sea level on any given day is about 150. The capillaries of your lungs, about 100. That's where your gas exchange occurs, which again we'll do more detail on Wednesday. The venous blood, the blood that's delivering the oxygen to the tissues, has a PO2 of about 40. Muscle, normal activity, walking across campus, et cetera, about 20. Muscle under strenuous conditions on the treadmill or the bicycle or whatever can have PO2s of around 5. So again, that's very strenuous exercise. So basic, in basic fact, what myoglobin does, and it's one of the ways we can see it is graphically, is myoglobin binds oxygen when PO2 is high and releases it only at very, very low PO2s. This that you see graphically is basically graphically what I just said in words. It's called an oxygen affinity curve. We're going to see an oxygen affinity curve for myoglobin, and then we'll see one for hemoglobin, and we'll see several more on Wednesday. And basically what an oxygen affinity curve shows you is percent oxygen saturation versus oxygen pressures in millimeters of mercury. And as you look at this curve, basically what you can see is myoglobin hangs on to its oxygen until pressures get very, very low. So when pressures get very, very low, then it will release oxygen. But for the most part, down in this, just in this range, for the most part it's pretty flat, and the oxygen remains bound, so it remains about 100% saturated, 98 to 100% saturated, over most of this range. But down in here, when you get down to the really low levels, such as under very strenuous exercise, myoglobin will release its oxygen. So what it means is myoglobin has a high affinity for oxygen. It keeps it bound. It likes it. And under most physiological conditions, like us just sitting here, the oxygen remains bound to the myoglobin. But if we were to get up from here and go out and run a marathon or get on a treadmill or ride our bikes to Torrance or something and really strain our muscles, in other words, then our pressures would drop very low, then myoglobin can release its oxygen to the tissues. So the role of myoglobin biochemically or physiologically is to store oxygen, and it only releases it during times of crisis that involve oxygen deprivation in your tissues. And so there can be also times of trauma, other things that can happen where the myoglobin will need to let go or deliver its oxygen. But mainly, it stores it and saves it and releases it only when it's really, really needed, when the pressures fall very low. And it turns out that animals or mammals like seals and whales have a lot of myoglobin. And that's because they obviously take very deep dives and they come up for air very infrequently. So they're able to store the oxygen over long periods of time and at deep pressures and release it as needed. So they have a higher percentage of myoglobin than, say, we would. So that's myoglobin storing. Again, it stores and releases only in times of deprivation, so PO2s of 5 or less. Hemoglobin has a structure that's very, very similar to myoglobin, except it's more complex. And it's more complex because it's basically like 4 myoglobins put together. So it is a tetramer. It has 4 different proteins. 2 of them are called alpha and 2 of them beta. So it's got 2 alphas and 2 betas that come together to give it what we call quaternary structure. And you remember when we introduced that, we said there are a few proteins, hemoglobin being a great example, that have quaternary structure. And that is where 4 distinct proteins, the 2 alphas and the 2 betas, each of those 2 alphas and 2 betas has its own primary, secondary, tertiary structure. Each of them has its own heme group. So each of them has its own heme prosthetic group. And all 4 of those have to come together to make one functioning hemoglobin molecule or hemoglobin protein. Now it turns out that the complexity of hemoglobin, the fact that it has 4 proteins coming together and it's got 4 heme prosthetic groups, means it also has 4 sites to bind oxygen. So it can clearly, one molecule of hemoglobin can bind much more oxygen than one of myoglobin. And it turns out that when hemoglobin binds an oxygen to one of its subunits, one of the heme prosthetic groups and one of its subunits, there's a conformational change that happens, and we will see on Wednesday we call it relaxing, and that change allows it to bind quickly and efficiently 3 more oxygen molecules to the other 3 heme prosthetic groups. And that is a concept called cooperativity, cooperative binding, where one binds and it eases the way or paves the path for the other 3 to bind more easily. And we're going to talk about that a lot on Wednesday. Now, as we look at the biochemistry or the physiology of hemoglobin, we can look at it in terms of words and also in terms of the picture, again, our oxygen affinity curve. But again, we want to keep in mind that the hemoglobin has 4 heme prosthetic groups. So there's one in each of the alpha chains and one in each of the beta chains. So it's got four heme groups. Remember, the heme group is an organic cofactor, the prosthetic group that sits in a cleft in the protein, never leaves. It's got six coordination sites, four by bound by nitrogen, one by the proximal histidine, and the fourth site is where the oxygen binds. And then electrostatically, that oxygen attracts what we call the distal histidine, another histidine residue. So keeping that in mind, we see here the difference, comparison, if you will, of the percent saturation versus the pressures of oxygen as the curves for myoglobin and hemoglobin. And the first thing you know is hemoglobin, or you notice, is hemoglobin has that classic kind of sigmoidal shape, an S shape to it. And as we look at it, basically what it shows us is that hemoglobin gives up its oxygen much easier and at much higher pressures of oxygen than myoglobin does. So basically what happens is hemoglobin in the lungs takes up oxygen, because again, the lungs is where respiration is occurring, CO2 is going out, oxygen is coming in, takes up oxygen in the lungs and releases it to the tissues. And you will notice that even at 40 millimeters of mercury, hemoglobin is releasing quite a bit of oxygen, and at 20 millimeters, it's lost almost all of it already. So hemoglobin lets go of, delivers its oxygen at higher pressures of O2, PO2s, millimeters of mercury. And so basically the purpose, the biochemical or physiological role of hemoglobin is to oxygenate the tissues. That's why we have so much of it, and that's basically what it does. So it is this complex protein that has quaternary structure. It's got the four heme groups. Each of those heme groups is capable of binding an oxygen molecule, and the hemoglobin goes to the lungs, it picks up oxygen, and then it goes and delivers it to the tissues. And this is all the time under normal physiological conditions. So as we're sitting here, as we're walking across campus, as we're doing whatever, hemoglobin is the thing that oxygenates the tissues. It turns out that we have so much hemoglobin, it also contributes to the buffering capacity of blood, so that one equation, which we saw in the exam, is not the only blood buffer. Bicarbonate system is the major one, but hemoglobin also contributes a little bit, and it contributes because it has a lot of histidine residues in it. And histidine is a basic R group that we learned. And it has a really keen ability to donate and accept protons. And basically that's our most basic definition of what an acid and a base is, proton acceptors and donors. Well, it turns out histidine can do that really well. And so we have so much hemoglobin with so much histidine, it contributes a bit to the buffering of blood. And we will see histidine and its donation and acceptance of protons again when we talk about enzymes, and in particular enzyme mechanisms, the serine proteases we'll talk about. So this is a very brief introduction to hemoglobin and myoglobin. You want to keep in mind the big picture, what's going on with the prosthetic group, the coordination sites, the difference particularly between myoglobin and hemoglobin. And then we're going to go on and talk about gas transport.